You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. I hope you're surviving your first full real week of 2020. As always, I am one of the hosts of this lovely podcast, Tony East, covering the Pacers for Forbes and the Fieldhouse. And today, we have a game against the Miami Heat. I tried to get a Heat person to come on and chat with me. Unfortunately, I was unable to nail that down. I really only hit one person. I'm sorry, I should have gotten another. That is my fault. But you can get my off-the-cuff thoughts about the Heat and what the Pacers can improve upon from last time these two teams played to get the win at home this time. And then I want to talk a little about Aaron Holiday and stuff that's been going on with him and his passing versus shooting and what's more important. I think we all kind of get what's going on there, but we'll look more into it. And then some Jeremy Lamb stuff, because I have something I want to share about Jeremy Lamb. But we'll start with the Miami Heat, since those teams play tonight. That's the big thing. The Pacers are going to try to avenge their 113-112 loss from the end of December, or late December. I think it was the 27th. If you'll recall, the Pacers were winning. They had one stop to get. They forced two misses from the Heat. Couldn't grab the rebound. Too long rebound, something that's been plaguing this team of late. In the Heat, on their third attempt, Goran Dragic was able to put one in and give the Heat the win. So that's a starting point against this Heat team, is crashing the defensive glass. The Heat had 14 offensive rebounds. 11 of those came from Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. So that is unacceptable. Another thing to note here, by the way, Jimmy Butler missed the Heat's last game against the Blazers. If he's out, the Pacers should walk right through them. But Bam cannot be that good. You know, Sabonis or Turner, whoever's on him, I'm imagining it will be Sabonis, will just have to do all they can, because the Heat aren't even that good of an offensive rebounding team this year. They average 9.2 per game. That's 28th in the league. So to give up 14 of them and to see Bam go 8 of 10 and have 6 assists, some of those were on kickouts from those rebounds. You know, he was dominant, and Bam is great. We've talked about him on this show many times between All-Stars in this game. But he, you know, Bam is not an 18, 15, and 6 guy. He is like a 13, 8, and 4 kind of guy. What does he average? That was off my head. He averages 15, 10, and 5. So to get 18, 15, and 6, you know, there a lot went wrong there. They have to be better on him. And some of that is just simply don't let him have the ball as much. Get these rebounds. It's different. Some of their offensive rebounding struggles have been on long rebounds. Some of his were long, but a lot of those were inside. They have to be better getting those rebounds around the basket. That'll go a long way, because they did a pretty good job forcing misses from the Heat in general. You know, the Heat shot above 40% from three and still shot under 45% from the field. They were 24 of – that's horrible math. No, that's right. They were 24 of 51 from two-point range. You know, that's – under 50%. That's great. If you hold a team under 50% shooting from two, you can win if they don't shoot really well from three and the Heat were great from the free throw line. That could happen again. You know, they have guys who are capable of getting to the line. In the league this year, they're third in free throws made per game. They're good at that. That's not a big deal. The shooting, though, that can be corrected. The Heat rank 16th in the league in three-pointers made per game. So they can do better defending the perimeter in that way, and some of that will come from better offensive rebounding. Another thing to note from last time these guys played is Malcolm Brogdon did not play, and Aaron Holiday was okay in this game. He was 7 of 15 from the field with 17 points. That's all right. More points than shots. You can live with that. 9 assists and no turnovers, you know. That kind of stuff is what stands out about him, and I want to talk about that in our next segment. As good as he is, you know, he took that last shot and missed it. He couldn't contain Kendrick Nunn perfectly, and Kendrick Nunn, totally a shoot-first point guard. You know it's coming. He still had 17 points on 14 shots. You know, if you can contain Kendrick Nunn a little better and maybe get a little more organized floor play from your point guard, if Brogdon is able to play, that would go a long way. And even beyond that, you know, 4 assists from Nunn setting up his teammates. As good as Kendrick Nunn is, and as fun of a story he's been this year, he doesn't average 4 assists per game. He shouldn't be able to initiate that easily. They can shut down some other options for the Heat if they're able to contain him a little better with Brogdon. And then the bench this time, Man, how fun was this game? Just reliving, seeing some of these stats, seeing some of these plays flash up on my right is just a treat to see. The bench shot, amazing in the first Heat-Pacers game. They're going to have to be equally good because something about the Heat that makes them so dangerous and so special in their perch in the third of the East is that we've talked about this before. They're pretty deep and balanced. You know, the nine guys they played against the Pacers last time, which doesn't even feature Justice Winslow, who probably won't be back, but maybe he is. You know, that's, they had nine solid NBA players. You know, James Johnson is good, and he's not even in their rotation. They get a ton of stuff from just about everybody, which makes them kind of hard to guard. You really have to stay home on your man, and if you're going to help, you know, if someone's going to come over to help in the lane, or if someone's going to help when the ball's flying around the perimeter after a scramble or something, everybody has to be able to rotate to the next shooter and up and, you know, do it fast and do it correctly, because these guys will kill you with their extra passes. They'll kill you with their quick handoffs. They have tons of guys, you know, Jimmy, Kendrick Nunn, Derek Jones, Tyler Hero, Goran Dragic, that can drive to the rim, and then they have good shooters on the perimeter to punish you if you help incorrectly. So you really have to stay home on your man with this team and have your defensive rotations unlocked, because a few slippages could lead to 9 or 10 more points for the Heat. If Brogdon plays, I think the Pacers are probably going to win. Even if Brogdon doesn't, you know, it continues to shoot as poorly as he has this year, the Pacers are still only 6-6 without him. Like, he is massively important to this team, both because, you know, he, high IQ players blend well with other high IQ players, but B, just something about what they do changes the game for on both ends of the floor. Even if we don't necessarily see it as observers because we don't understand, or we have to watch it a second time to see, oh, that positioning was so great, or oh, that ball pressure at that timing was so great, or, you know, looking off this defender was so huge. Like, all this stuff that you miss in real time, Brogdon is so good at a lot of those things, and that's why he's such a good point guard. That's why he's able to make everybody around him better. They didn't have that last time, even with Holiday doing a great job setting up his teammates, breaking presses, all those sorts of things that he is good at. They just didn't have the Brogdon effect, especially on defense. And I think if he plays, the Pacers should win. They'll get just a tick better point guard play in a game that they lost by 1 point last time. They should win. If Brogdon does not play, you know, the Pacers aren't going to shoot as well as they did from three last time against the Heat. I think this game could be close and down to the wire. But if Jimmy Butler doesn't play, the Pacers win even if Brogdon doesn't play. So injuries will be a key factor in who I think is going to win. But just to aggregate my thoughts, I think I'll go 55% chance the Pacers win this game. I just think they match up pretty well with the Heat. For as balanced and as good as the Heat are, the way they start Bam and Myers-Leonard together helps the Pacers. The way they have Olynyk out there, often with another center, kind of helps the Pacers. I think the Pacers match up pretty well with this team. When Justice comes back, that might be a little different, but we'll see. But I think the Pacers are more likely than not to walk out with their first big win of 2020. Not that the Hornets wasn't impressive or a big deal to get on the right track. This would be a good team. This is the last team in the top eight of the East that the Pacers have not, well, besides the Bucks. This is the last team in the non-Bucks tier of the East the Pacers have not beat. It would be great to get it over with and have a win against everybody to focus on and build off of if it comes to that in the playoffs. So I think the Pacers win in this game. Moving on to other stuff. So Aaron Holiday had a tragic quarter against the Hawks earlier this week. I want to talk about something with Aaron Holiday, not specifically that quarter, after this break. But before this break, this isn't an ad, actually. I know often I tease them like that and change it up. Let's talk about Australia really quick. There are tons of fires in Australia going on right now. I believe as of 2 days ago, so this is completely out of date, but Alex Riley, who makes awesome graphics, hosts the Pacers podcast, does a ton of great stuff for Pacer fans on Twitter, sent me this. So, I mean, millions and millions of acres of land are burning. Hundreds of millions of animals are dying. People are dying. Australia needs a lot of help to put out these fires. They need resources. They need help. So if you can and are willing, the Australian Red Cross is a great place to donate. The NWS Rural Fire Service and the Salvation Army, all of those Australian-based they're not Australian-based, but the Australian arm of those charities, if you can and you are willing, please donate to them. They need your help right now, and the world could use people who are able to donate. But now, an escape from all the scary stuff of the world going on right now, let's talk about some basketball and Aaron Holiday. Something we frequently discuss on this show, me most more than Adam, but we both talk about it a lot with Aaron, is something that's made him better, and this is well documented, and probably, honestly, I beat this drum too much, is that he is deferring more. Last year, he was shoot all the time. Even early this year, he was shoot all the time. He's learned to pass. I really wanted to dig into this. And what is too many shots for him? When is it a problem? I think I found a kind of sweet spot. So an Aaron Holiday... in his six highest shooting games, so 19 shots, 18, 16, 15, and 14, the Pacers are 2-4 in those games. Now, big asterisk here. In his four highest field goal attempt games, he played a ton of minutes because Brogdon did not play. So, should be noted they did not have their star. Their record is not perfectly indicative of the full strength Pacers. But there are some games near the top of his field goal attempts. Orlando, for example, he took 13 and made 6. Then he has a run of 11 shot games where he made 4-5. You know, some of these games when he's shooting this many times, the Pacers are losing. They lost by 28 when he was 5 of 11 against Milwaukee. They lost to Houston. Brogdon didn't play 4 of 11 that game. The Pelicans game, for example. There's a lot of games where he shoots a lot and they lose. There's also this crazy stretch. Every time he's taken 8 or 9 or 10 shots, every single time he's taken 8 to 10 shots, they've won the game. And when he takes 11 shots, they're 2-2. So somewhere in that, when he plays big minutes with Brogdon out even, and some of these games Brogdon played, Memphis, Brogdon played, that's in this run of games, Charlotte, the Charlotte that they won at home, Brogdon played then, Atlanta that they won, I think Brogdon played then. There are games that he's taking this many shots that Brogdon's playing. That is, I think that is his sweet spot, is just below 10 shots if he's going to play a lot of minutes. And if he's going to play less than that, maybe in the 7 to 6 range, but that kind of depends. Because when he gets to 10 or 11, you know, I think he doesn't often, like, take such bad shots that you feel like he's super forcing it. But that either means the defense is leaving him because they think he's the worst option, or he is forcing it a little bit. You know, he had 2 games of 19 shots. That's crazy. I never think he should be the guy taking the most shots on the team. You know, that's too far. So somewhere in that 8 to 11 range, I think, is where we see the sweet spots of Aaron Holiday. And even shooting percentage-wise, you know, in the games he's taken 10 shots, 60%, 60%, 70% shooting. In 9 shots, he had made 6 and 8. Yeah, I don't want to read those whole percentages. They're not as clean as the other ones. In the 8-shot games, he shot well. Like, these games are big for him. And then if you flip to passing, his most fewest in a game this season, this is also the same caveat as with Brogdon. You know, he obviously in bigger minute games is going to rack up higher totals in the total stat department. But in the 3 games he's had 10 assists or more, they're 2-1. That loss was the Denver game, right after the start of 2020. Excuse me, I completely lost that. Brogdon played at the start of that game, right? Am I wrong about that? No, he did. Brogdon played at the start of that game, so he only played 21 minutes, 10 assists. He actually played well in that game. They just gave it away because of the offensive rebounds. But his high passing games tend to go well, and not too many passes, because none of those games is he getting to the right number of shots. There is a sweet spot for him of like 10 shots, 5 assists. When he is the starter, more assists is better. And assists are a funky stat to me, because obviously there are some players where they reflect something about their passing. Sabonis throws guys open all the time. McConnell, sure, his passing directly is the cause of the basket line. But sometimes assists can mean you pass to the guy who made a shot. And a high assist number can mean your team was just hitting crazy amounts of shots, right? Like against Brooklyn, for example, the one they won by 29 in mid-November when the Pacers just blew the doors off of them and Mitri Long played and all that. Holiday had 13 assists, but like you'd never think Aaron was like diming up guys and like hitting cutters and stuff. It's like they just made a shot. So assists are not the perfect barometer of Holiday setting up other guys, but there is some nuance to saying, you know, they do well when he has the right balance of shots and passing. When he shoots too much, they clearly aren't as good as they can be if he finds that balance. When he passes too much, I mean, there's you know, maybe not too much, but when he's passing a ton, he might be passing up shots that he should be giving up. So I think it's going to be hard for him to find that sweet spot, but there is a fun run of like every game Aaron Holiday's had one assist, guess what? Pacers have won it. Like, I mean, obviously Brogdon played a lot of those games, but there is a way for Aaron to play that is probably right, and it's up to him to find that balance. But some stats show that he definitely should not take as many shots as he has in some games this year, and he definitely should be looking to set up teammates as much as he can and be a better passer. So that was a lot of numbers, but I think we're seeing what the flaws of Aaron Holiday can be, even though he's clearly been awesome this year. You know, he's won the Pacers more games than he's lost, and he's only a sophomore. He's been great. It's worth digging into those and seeing what the next step could look like for him, featuring the perfect number of shots and passes in his current role. That was fun. I really enjoyed that. So Jeremy Lamb, Adam's been picking on. People are picking on what he might look like with the bench. I'm going to try to quantify that after this little break. So Vic's going to come back end of this month, early February. We're maybe a month away from Victor Oladipo playing basketball again. And when that happens, Jeremy Lamb, who has had quite the season, will move to the bench. He will no longer be a starter. He'll be more of a focal point with the second unit, which should be good for him because he has done well getting to his spots, going left, things like that. But people have mentioned to me, both Adam and on Twitter, I do not want to feel like anyone to feel like I'm singling out Adam when he's not here. Don't think he could fit necessarily super well with the second unit. They move the ball pretty fast. They all are high IQ guys who pass a lot. And I hear the term with Jeremy Lamb a lot, ball stopper. Jeremy Lamb, a ball stopper. I don't know if I agree with that. So we'll talk about that too. But first I want to start with how Lamb and the bench lineups have fared so far this year. So here is the filters I went through. I said Jeremy Lamb is in the game, obviously. And then to show that it's the bench, I think Warren has to be out. One of Sabonis and Turner has to be out. And Brogdon has to be out, right? So you have one of the two big men plays with the bench all the time, right? That's just how they stagger those two guys. And then Warren and Brogdon, you know, they're with bench guys, but that would throw in too many fluky starter-esque lineups. So these are lineups without one of the big men, Brogdon and Warren. So, for example, the highest minute of this group lineup is only 9, and Lamb has only played in these scenarios for 27 minutes. So we're not talking about a ton of playing time here. In fact, we're talking about a pretty small amount of playing time here, but I thought it was still interesting to look at how it's fared so far. So in these 27 minutes of playing time, that lineup with 9 minutes is Sabonis, Lamb, Holiday, McDermott, and McConnell. In 21 possessions, they scored 28 points. That's fantastic. And overall, in these Lamb and the bench minutes, the Pacers have 69, nice, points in 54 possessions for a nice 127.78 offensive rating. Yeah, that will freaking work. That will score a lot of points if they're able to sustain that. Now, they're probably not. You know, their three-point shooting isn't so fluky in these minutes, 41.1%. That's high, not, like, absurdly high. They're making a lot of twos, though. They've hit almost 70% of their twos. That will not hold. But it kind of works. You know, they have good groups. They've outscored the opponent, which I think is important. Opponents are at 54 points on 65 points on 54 possessions. There we go. My goodness, math just evaded me there. And that's actually not very good defense. That could be something to monitor with this group. You know, that group I just said, I have all sorts of that. The group I just said that has 9 minutes, for example, only gave up 19 points on 20 possessions. That's awesome. But then, you know, the group with the second and third most minutes, one features both Holiday brothers instead of McConnell. That group gave up 18 points on 13 possessions. And then one that features Turner gave up 16 points on 11 possessions. So the defense might be something to worry about, but I think the offense is going to be great. You know, we've seen Lamb this season hit trail threes and spot up threes, and he's really dangerous going left. And I talked to a scout who just said, like, wow, he's going left every time. The Hornets did everything in their power to force him right, the team that knows him best. So I think that is something that is worth monitoring, is their defense might not be great, but I think their offense is going to be fine. We've seen plenty of guys fit well around him. They'll get shooting and shooting from McDermott and Holiday, and Lamb himself can create his own shot, and either McConnell or Aaron, whichever one ends up staying in the rotation, can set up other guys. Turner and Sabonis obviously both bring unique and special talents. So I think it will work. Especially on offense, they'll have to find a way to get better on defense together. And defense is more of a team aspect than the offensive floor is most of the time. So I think more reps will help. Although I understand how that could be weak, especially if Justin Holiday's not out there. You know, if you're counting on Lamb and McDermott as your wing stoppers, that's going to be tough. As much I've seen a lot of people prop up Lamb's D. I don't think it's been awesome, but that could be a little bit rougher. And you know, Turner behind them will help. He can correct some of their mistakes if they're willing to rotate down and help him out. But they're going to have to be better. They're going to have to find a way to be better on D, everybody, basically, to account for the drop you're getting from that second unit, because Aaron and TJ McConnell are tiny, but they're okay defenders. They play big for their size. So here is the stats to stick to. People talk about Jeremy Lamb, the ball stopper. I totally disagree with that. Did you know Aaron Holiday has a longer average seconds per touch than Jeremy Lamb? I mean, I guess he brings the ball up the floor, but like his average seconds per touch is pretty close to TJ Warren's and Edmund Sumner's. Like, he's just as much of a, you know, those little guys don't stop the ball. They attack the basket the second they catch it or they throw it away. You know, he's not stopping the ball. Like, I don't understand that line of thinking. He's at 3 seconds per touch. Aaron Holiday's over 4.5 for reference, and Sumner's right behind him at 2.8. You know, that's not long. That's not ball stopping. You know, I want to see what Tyreek Evans was at last year for some other context. I wish I had thought of that. So Tyreek Evans, who actually was a ball stopper, if this would ever compute fast enough. Man, NBA.com maybe doesn't want me to tell you this number. Yeah, Tyreek Evans last year was at 4 seconds per touch, so over a full second longer than Jeremy Lamb is this year. So I think he will be fine. I don't think he will be a ball stopper. I think he'll fit in with that group on offense. Their defense will need some work. Absolutely. You know, I think any new unit will have to do some work on that. But I think it'll work well. I think it'll be great, and he has potential to actually take that group to a higher level. So we'll have to see how it goes, and it'll obviously be great when Vic is back. It will give the bench more of a margin for error to improve, which will be awesome. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to this game tonight against the Heat so the Pacers can prove to every top team in the East that, hey, they can beat you. Should be a great one. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there. Come say hey if you're also there. Please support Australia if you can. Thank you guys for tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And Adam will recap this action, and we will see you tomorrow.